Drip irrigation holds great promise as the most efficient method for watering plants. Unlike traditional sprinkler systems that can be affected by wind and heat, drip irrigation offers a precise way to water plants. However, one of its main challenges lies in the amount of infrastructure that's required for its implementation. In this episode, I'll share my insights into maximizing the effectiveness of drip irrigation, exploring innovative approaches and local research that could potentially revolutionize its use, especially as we face dwindling water supplies and prolonged droughts. So welcome to Plants Dig Soil, a podcast about realistic regen ag. I'm your host, Scott Gillespie, and I'm an agronomist from Western Canadian prairies specializing in climate-smart agriculture. I discuss scientifically proven practices that benefit the planet, and just as importantly, farmers' economic sustainability. Be sure to visit my website, www.plantsdigsoil.com, for resources and information about the services that I offer. If you've been following the podcast for a while, you may recall that one of my early episodes delved into the world of drip irrigation. Inspired by a YouTube tutorial, I attempted to create a drip system using PVC pipes in my garden. What I discovered was that drip irrigation works best in flat garden beds of modest size. Even the slightest change in elevation led to uneven water distribution, and when using long sections of pipe, the pressure at the end wasn't sufficient for watering. Several years ago, I eventually abandoned the drip irrigation in the annual section of my garden. It continued to work reasonably well in the perennial section, thanks to the plants having extensive root systems that could grow towards the drip lines. However, the annual plants struggled when I relied solely on drip irrigation. Now, before we go too far, I want to clarify that the drip system worked well when I had modest rainfall. As a supplemental watering method, it kept the garden thriving. The key was that the plants had established roots through the soil profile. Before the soil dried out completely, an occasional rain shower every few weeks kept everything balanced out. However, during a severe drought, this approach fell short. The critical concept to grasp with drip irrigation is that it only wets a small area of the soil. In loamy or clayey soil, water can spread further, but in sandy soil, which is mostly what I have, it tends to penetrate vertically. This means that during the peak seasons, you might need to run the system almost daily to achieve the equivalent of an inch of water covering the entire soil surface, which would penetrate approximately 7 inches. With drip irrigation, you're looking at a surface area of more like 3 to 5 inches in a 24 to 36 inch spacing between lines. During a field tour at Lethbridge College this past summer, I had the opportunity to learn about subsurface drip irrigation from Dr. Wilhelmine Apples. This system involves burying the lines below the surface to allow for regular machinery use, like tilling and seeding. Dr. Apples emphasized the importance of staying on top of irrigation scheduling. While it's possible to moisten the root zone early in the season, once the plants enter the rapid growth stage and the heat of the summer sets in, it's nearly impossible to catch up. In an ideal scenario, a supplemental sprinkler system could help catch up in periods and aid in germination after seeding. However, this can significantly increase costs. In such a system, effective management of the subsurface drip becomes essential to avoid the need for supplemental watering. So to enhance early season germination, experimenting with no-till or strip-till might be necessary. During another tour this year, I came across a cost-effective system that piqued my interest. Here's the concept. Attach drag lines to a pivot system that disperses water as it moves through the soil. This setup allows for a transition from sprinkler irrigation to drip irrigation as needed. In the midst of the growing season, occasional use of the sprinklers can help supplement the drip irrigation. This system offers a significant advantage in windy climates, which is where I'm from, ensuring the effective watering when gusts are strong, which happens often. However, I have concerns about disease transfer in the system. there's a possibility that the lines could inadvertently spread disease from plant to plant, particularly during high disease pressure years. On the other hand, relying solely on drip irrigation keeps the foliage dry, making it harder for diseases to take hold. Another potential drawback is the wear and tear on pivot systems. Aftermarket modifications for pivots that are designed to pull equipment through the soil may work for a few years, but I think the cumulative effects could add up over time. Now, returning to my garden, I've went back to using drip irrigation. I reconfigured the pipes to minimize length and ensure that they follow mostly downhill path for watering. I kept a sprinkler on standby for when the drip irrigation was lagging behind, although I did use it sparingly this year. An intriguing observation this summer was that after the vegetables had germinated and established, and the weeds had been managed within the rows, the weeds in the pathways hardly grew. This meant that my plans for a living cover crop between the rows didn't pan out as expected, but the pathways remained mostly weed-free. So as my region faces impending water restrictions in the coming year, we must explore new and improved methods for efficiently delivering water to our land. Historically, flood irrigation was only about one-third effective, with two-thirds of the water wasted. Sprinklers and pivot systems doubled that efficiency and that primarily was also saving on labor. Now, drop tubes with low pressures and large droplets further cut losses in half, so now we're up to about 85% efficiency. So that means only about 15% of the water doesn't make it through the plant. Achieving that last bit of improvement will require substantial investment and infrastructure. However, given the current conditions and the imperative to use water more effectively, I anticipate that significant changes in the years and decades ahead. To end off the episode, I'll give a quick date on the life of an agronomist. My week has mostly revolved around coordinating soil sampling. October is the optimal time for soil sampling, as the soil temperature falls below 5 degrees Celsius, which halts most microbial processes. However, due to the need for potato land preparation to start immediately after harvest, which is usually in late September, soil sampling becomes a priority at this time. As soon as I receive the results, I'll be working on fertilization plans for any fields that require it this fall. Now, while fall application of fertilizer is discouraged in many areas due to potential losses, our semi-arid climate allows us to safely incorporate it into the soil. With potatoes, the fertilizer is spread on the surface and immediately buried in the hills the following year. This keeps it at a depth of about 6 to 12 inches, and that protects it not only with the frozen soil, but then it's sitting there right until we want to plant in April. I've also been fielding calls from prospective clients, both locally and further away. Fall is an excellent time to start working together, as it allows us to reflect on the current season and make plans for the upcoming season during the winter months. If you've been a longtime listener and are wondering if working with me could benefit you, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Physical distance isn't an issue. I live in Tabor, Alberta, Canada, but we can easily collaborate through email, phone calls, and video conferencing. Finally, teaching remains a significant part of my schedule. I travel to Lethbridge College to teach on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday afternoons, and the preparation keeps me busy on those days. It's incredibly rewarding, though, teaching the students and learning from them, and it helps to keep me sharp in my field. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more with you in next week's episode.